Robert,
Yeah.
earlier we had a conversation in which I told a little known story of the really this the evolution of this technique for Alexander himself, for FM Alexander. And I think, you know, when you actually asked me about the creation story, you were wanting to hear the version that most people know of, the version that that Alexander wrote, perhaps, or maybe one that was in one of his a biography. So I am going to ask you to talk about what the creation story, how Alexander came about developing this technique.
Okay.
And if he
and,
wasn't,
and actually,
if stuff didn't happen, which it did, of course.
Right. My original question was sort of, what is the creation story, and what can we learn from it?
Oh, gosh, I didn't know.
You forgot that part, right?
You can answer that in another conversation.
Oh, no, they're totally intertwined. Well, wait, maybe we could have two separate or three separate conversations. But the creation story, it's told by Alexander primarily in his third book, Use of the Self. And a lot of it's in the first chapter called Evolution of a Technique. I believe there's also a section in The Universal Constant, which is his fourth book, where he sort of revisits it and says some interesting things. But it's not in contrast to the Use of the Self version. But the basic story is...
I don't remember where that about that in Universal Constant.
I'm
Do
pretty
you
sure
have a sense of where it is? I mean, I don't doubt it's there. I just, it's been
I have,
a while
I'll
since
have
I
to,
read it.
I don't know. We'll put it out on the web.
Yes,
I have no idea. I'm pretty sure it's in that book. And he just spends a little time saying some of the same things he said earlier, but in some ways it's almost a nicer account or clearer account. Anyway, the basic story is that he's a reciter who, in today's terms, suffered from laryngitis. And in addition, and the laryngitis threatened to cut his career short. He apparently was quite talented, and he loved the theater. And for sure, the theater was a lot better gig for him than the other alternatives around, which were working in a tin mine or working in a tin mine office, which he had done before. He was an Australian of great pluck and determination and wanted to rise above his circumstances. And he was good at acting, good at reciting, and he didn't want to lose his career. So he had this problem. He went to voice coaches. He went to doctors. The long and the short of it is that nothing really helped. And he made a critical decision, which was to figure out for himself what he was doing that might be causing the problem. Because one thing he had noticed is that he wasn't noticeably suffering from laryngitis or gasping when he was just speaking normally. So it occurred to him that he was doing something different when he was engaged in public speaking. And he set out to examine himself. He used mirrors, observed himself from various angles, and fairly quickly discovered what the problem was. He was tightening his neck. He was pulling his head back and down on his spine a bit, and clearly that would have not a good effect on his speaking voice. The big issue for him was to figure out a way to stop doing that. Originally his thinking was, well, I'll try to do the opposite. But that didn't seem to work. And eventually, over and maybe not just in a very short period of time, but over a longer period of self-study, he came up with the idea that really the smartest thing to do was just to stop doing the pattern that was getting in the way. And he developed some very specific, you could almost say, mental directions for doing that. And he also, in the course of his career, developed some very useful hands-on teaching skills where he could guide people so that they weren't dependent just on his words, but he could actually show them what he was up to. And that kind of forms the basis of the Alexander technique today. Do you want me to carry on, or
oh
you
yes
think that's
I
enough?
Thought that was
oh.
really, really nice.
So that's the story. And I don't think we have any reason to think that it was not a correct story, although I think in the popular mind among Alexander teachers, there's an idea that this process took him a very long time and pretty much suspended everything else in his life while he did it. And neither of those facts are correct. It took him maybe 2 or 3 years of some self-study, and he was doing other things, to get to the point where he could actually make a really significant difference in his speaking. I think he made the difference fairly quickly, but to get to the point where he could actually help other people. And he had begun teaching and become very effective. And a lot of the doctors that he originally went to help him became supporters of his and sent patients to him. And one of them told him flat out that he should get out of Australia and go to England, where the action was back then. And Alexander took that advice, and I guess you could say the rest is history. But what we could learn from it is that the process he used, which was sort of being open to possibilities, recognizing that he needed another way of observing himself than the ones he had been using before. That is, that he couldn't necessarily trust his kinesthetic sense to give him accurate information about what he was doing. On the other hand, using mirrors was pretty good because he'd never looked at himself that much in the mirror, so he kind of approached it fresh, and especially he hadn't had side views of himself. So he could more rely on the visual stimulus, the visual information as a guide to what he was doing and whether he was successful in not doing it. If he were alive today and doing those same things, he might very well spring for a camcorder and a TV monitor and have the camcorder giving him a side view and the monitor directly in front. And in fact, that's a very powerful self-teaching tool that anyone listening to this could do themselves. Just set up a camcorder, look at themselves from the side in real time with a monitor in front of you, and start doing something, speaking or singing or anything, and you might be astonished at what you'll see. So I think that's what we can learn.
Yeah.
You know, he was self-taught. He was a very observant person by all accounts. He was watched and observed animals a lot, and he loved horses and horse racing as a young man, and he would go to the track ahead of the race and just watch the horses as they were ridden around for exercise, and he was very good at judging whether a particular horse would do better or worse than the odds suggested, and by all accounts he was a pretty successful better. And that was a lifelong interest of his: horses, horseback riding, horse races.
And it sounds like he couldn't have done better at that, huh?
That he would?
He couldn't have done better.
Done better?
And never mind.
No.
I thought, okay, all right.
Is that a joke?
Yes.
So, I mean, that's the basic. I think if he could do it, there's no reason why we can't do it. It's certainly going to be a lot easier if you have someone there that can help you, and that's what an Alexander teacher does. I bet Alexander, back in whenever we're talking now, around 1890 or 1888, 89, in there, I bet if there had been an Alexander teacher around in Melbourne and Sydney, Alexander would have gone to him right away. He certainly went to other kinds of teachers. He was quite interested for a while in other methods of physical education. He studied them, but he didn't find that they actually helped him in his situation. So I don't know. Is there anything more we want to say about this?
It's very, very good, very well put.
Do you want to add anything? But keep it brief.
No, I can't think of anything to add to that.
So that's our take on Alexander creation story and how it could be useful for us to read about and think about today. All right, that's it. Talk to you later.